We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Football world outraged as Arsenal continue to disrespect the needs and wishes of the neutral. This is the Arsenal Vision post-match podcast. My name is Elliot Smith, the Blackman's favorite Yankee Gunner. Look, a boring 0-0 at the Etihad, that's one thing. They were mad about it. I get it. But a boring 2-0 win at the Emirates, this has to stop. This just has to stop. When will Arsenal think of the neutral? Well, according to Rob Edwards, nothing. Because as Rob Edwards said in his post-match press conference, Arsenal don't give you anything. That's right. That's right, neutral. You'll get nothing and you'll like it. And you know who else will like it? We will like it. Because Arsenal continue to win. It is now 9 wins and 1 draw since the calendar ticked over to 2024. I think you could say that is a pretty good run of form that we are on. And you know what? Mikel Arteta, God bless Mikel Arteta for so many things, but especially for giving us podcasting manna from heaven. He said, the Luton game could be dull. It could be boring. We're in the weird lull of a very heated moment. What if I do lineup changes? And then the podcasters will have a bounty to discuss. And indeed, we will feast upon that bounty he hath given us. So thank you to him. And thank you for you for being here. I'm going to thank you even more in just a moment, but I can't thank you if I don't thank Clive for being Clive and for being here and for being on Twitter at ClivePFC. Hello, Clive.
Hello, hello.
And the man who sat in a different seat and the world turned on its axis and yet Arsenal still came away with 3 points. His name is Tim. You can find him on Twitter at Stillmaner. Hello, Tim.
Hello there. Yeah, Mikel Arteta was not the only one that rotated for this game. I literally sat on the other side of the stadium in the lower tier. I didn't have the tactical cam, Elliot. Mm. So you can completely disregard all my thoughts about this game.
Well, in case anyone's worried about disregarding my thoughts about the game, in case you thought you had a bad view, I had the view of man in a rowboat in a stormy sea trying to follow a football match because the broadcaster decided that the spider cam or whatever you want to call it would be the right view. So for half of the game, they gave us this camera just sliding back and forth on a line. And I think there were people that had to take Dramamine. Now, granted, the game was sort of like Dramamine in some ways, but had to take that to get themselves from being seasick watching the game. So, quick beat to tell you this. The fundraiser is flying. And I am, every year that we do the fundraiser, I have this moment before we start raising funds. And I say to myself, what if people are just sort of burnt out on giving? What if the cause doesn't resonate with them anymore? And that's just a fear I have because I feel such a tremendous responsibility, and I think we all do, to make this a success. And here we are 3 days in, and we're at almost £50,000 raised in 3 days, a third of the way where we need to be for the month. But we're going to supercharge this because if you give now, you are giving double whatever you give because we have a generous donation of £150,000 to match every pound given up to the first 150,000. So that means if you give 5, you've given 10. If you give 20, you've given 40. If you give 7,500, you've given,
15,000. I did it. but everyone who gives, no matter what you give, if you're able, of course, is entered to win a VIP box ticket to Arsenal Bournemouth, the second to last home game of the season. Could be a very important game indeed. And I can tell you, as someone who went to a Bournemouth home game last season, those sometimes are kind of fun. Reece Nelson would like a word. Look, I implore you, please go to YouTube or listen to the episode with Leah Williamson. She spoke brilliantly. This is such an important cause. There are a billion important causes around the world. We could give to all of them or none of them, but we picked one. And now we're going to back it. We're going to stand by these kids because they need us. And I hope you will support the fundraiser. On the fundraising page, there's also a link to the auction site. If you say, I don't want to just hope I win, I just have the money, I'm going to splash the cash, I'm going to buy one of those VIP tickets and meet Tim and Clive because they seem cool, then you can do that over there. JustGiving.com/page/AVP. JustGiving.com/page/AVP. And all the stuff is there. And I hope you will give. We have given £20,000 already, and we will continue to give more. But I hope you'll join in with us. It means the world to us that you do, by the way. Thank you for that. If you want to support us over on Patreon, by the way, we're doing instant reactions after every game. We're going to have a power rankings tomorrow. Power Rankings is one of the most fun episodes we do because we get to laugh at United and Chelsea, who are going to give us plenty to laugh about, I'm sure, later this evening, and we will sum it all up. So if you want to hear some schadenfreude about that game, Power Rankings tomorrow over on the Patreon side of things. So, you know, wherever you want to be, we want to be there with you. That's all that matters. Okay. Did that in under 5 minutes. That's got to be a record. Tim?
Yeah.
I expected some rotation. I did. I thought maybe Saka might get the night off, and he did. Now, I'll admit the fact that he wasn't in the squad at all tickles my whiskers a little bit, gets me a little fearful, but I think it's probably just precautionary. Some of the other changes did surprise me. Declan Rice, you know, I just never seen him get a night off. He gets a night off. Well, not completely off, but he gets the start off. What did you think about the, not that there was rotation, but the specific rotation he did, the volume of it, and the players who got their chance under the lights to come in and impress?
Yeah, I thought this was really interesting. I turned this over again and again in my head, like in the couple of days before the game, because I thought there's going to be changes. I thought somewhere between 3 and 6 is what I was thinking. And of course, what always happens when a game like this comes up, people on Twitter are like, you know, I think we should play Ramsdale as an inverted right back. And that what's the Obi Martins, the like the 14-year-old who's banging in loads of goals for the under 18s, he should play up front and all of that. And people go way overboard. And my instinct is always to be like, no, that is not going to happen. It's probably going to be 2 to 3 changes. But then I turned it over in my mind a bit more. And to your point, Elliot, first of all, there were players who needed minutes. And this is really the last opportunity we have this season to win a game at 75% when we're not quite in our rhythm, when we're playing some players who haven't had a lot of football in the last few months, and you know, you don't have that same cohesion. But the more the game approached, the more I thought you have to make 5 or 6 changes, just because when else can you really do it? Like, from here on in, it's going to have to be between 1 and 3 changes per game. This was the last opportunity. And at this stage of the season, you just have to take those chances. You have to calculate like that. The thing I think we on this podcast, and certainly we as fans, spend far too much time talking about rotation in October and November. Not going to happen. That is not when teams want to rotate, because players are cycling up. It's not just about, we can't rotate because we need to win these games. It's the cycling up process. They want the players to tune up to get to this stage of the season. But when you get to this stage of the season, you do have to kind of make decisions, not least as well because of the risk management. Like, at this stage of the season, a grade 2 hamstring puts you out for the season. You know, like a moderate injury. Like, we're still in with a chance of being in the Champions League final in 7 weeks' time. A moderate injury puts you out of the Champions League final. That's where we are now. So you have to do that little bit of risk management. And this was just the last opportunity to do that. And in my head, going into this game, I was thinking the worst thing I think that's going to happen if we make 5 or 6 changes, we might be 1-0 down on 60 minutes. And if that's the case, we're going to have 5 really good players to bring on and try and salvage that. And I think that's well within our capability. So I just felt risk management wise, we were never going to get a brilliant performance, but there were players who needed minutes. There were players who needed some time off because, like, let me tell you this, Declan Rice is not going to be on the bench again this season. No chance. No chance. He will start every game and he'll probably play every minute of every game, fitness permitting. So we had to take that opportunity. And and yeah, I just felt that this was the last chance to do that. And I was not remotely invested in the performance. And I'll stop there because I think there are some players who started who I think we'll talk about anyway.
Mm-hmm. There are.
yeah, indeed. And some of the thinking behind those guys as well.
Clive, before we get into the individuals, and I do think, let's be honest, probably the most interesting aspect of this podcast will be breaking down Smith Rowe, Partey, Zinchenko, Nelson. Those are the guys we got to look at. Do we need to talk about Martin Odegaard being brilliant, nearly setting up an extraordinary assist, his unbelievable finishing technique? Like, we can, but it would be probably repetitive at this point, right? Do we need to talk about Ben White doing whatever that was, a pirouette, a drag back in the center of the park and killing two Luton players dead and showing that he just continues to add string to his bows? We can, but again, it would be repetitive. It's these other players that came in that do give us, I think, fertile ground for discussion. But I want to just talk about the overall. Clive, there was something about Arsenal, and I said this on the Instant Reaction as my headline. It was Arsenal, but not quite. I saw some people actually online kind of angry about the performance at times, say, oh, the bozo gene has come back, some really inflammatory stuff. I thought it was over the top personally. But I do think that we saw some things from Arsenal that were things we saw last season, but really haven't been in our game in the last few months. Giveaways in the center of the park leading to some counterattacking opportunities, taking chances in certain areas that we haven't been taking chances in lately, leaving us exposed. Now, Luton didn't have the quality to punish us with it, but I'm wondering what you thought of the overall collective performance with these changes. Is it just maybe a slight lack of automatisms and coordination because there were so many changes? Or do you think we did some things in this game that were maybe a little different than the way we play when we have the real security and confidence of our more regular starting players?
Yeah, so funny enough, I've been thinking about this in my morning exercise today. You know what I'm like, you lot. So so when I was in my normal seat, and when the game started, you could see players making runs, stopping, then the ball going to where they should have carried on running to, right? And I'm thinking, uh-oh, here we go. No relationships. All relationships have changed. Chill out, Clive. Just see how this goes, shall we? You know what I mean? How can we expect all the cohesion to be there when we've changed half the team, right? So very glad to see Declan Rice come out. Thank you, Gareth Southgate, because you played in 2 90 minutes. I did predict he wouldn't play this game, and it was no surprise to me whatsoever. He's not a machine. He's a human being, right? So passes were going to go Australia. Passes were slow. People having extra touches. The first 5 minutes, 10 minutes of that game, it felt like a training game to get everyone to get touches on the ball. So straight away, I always think every game has context, right? So that was a context of this game. I didn't think that when I was in the bar before the game. I knew the team. But as soon as I saw the ball start running around the pitch, I thought, okay, now I know what we're doing here, right? And then it comes back to something I want to call this one brain, right? So we've all waited for this one brain team, and we now have it. We can see it. We can see it all forming. We know the relationships, we know the partnerships. And when it works, we know we can play different ways. We can drop in. We can go high. We can have Kai up front. We can do different things. We know the drill now, don't we, as fans? So what's happened, Elliot, is that we as fans have developed one brain. And when we see things outside of that context of the one brain, we then question it. So suddenly, Zinchenko's running across the midfield, playing blind passes around the corner, we all go, Thomas Partey plays a straight ball down the middle.
Yeah.
We don't see that. We know what we're doing, you know. Declan Rice plays it out to the fullback and goes outside of the block. Oh, have we forgotten the start of the season? We were saying we don't penetrate down the middle anymore and we're not clicking. And Declan Rice was getting blamed. We had to bring Odegaard deeper so we can get some ball progression. You know, so we've developed this one brain where we see certain actions and we accept them. When we see something different, we don't accept them. And then what we actually do, we go a step further and we critique them, right? So the context of the game, those players who came into this team, all of them, was particularly the four you mentioned earlier, need minutes, desperately need minutes. You know, bring Tommy Asi onto that at the end of the game. And so you have to judge them in that context. But I do think we have fans, we have created the one brand and what we think is right. But we may have to accept a little bit more evolution in the team, even from this point onwards. However, what I will say is, I can't deny to you, mate, there are some players there that maybe the team is evolving away from, but it doesn't mean they can't contribute in this critical period of the season.
Well, this is really the tricky needle to thread. For me, Tim, this is the hardest thing because I know we love the platitudes. You can't look past any opponent. You have to respect Luton. We knew we were going to beat Luton at home. And we did it in second gear. And we did it with heavy rotation. I do not see another fixture like this the rest of the season. And so Mikel did the smartest thing imaginable. He got some players some time off. He got to look at some players out there. But I am wondering if he saw enough from any of them. And we'll come on to Smith Rowe in a minute, but I want to talk about collectively to really trust them, not when it's Luton at home, but when it's Wolves away, tricky. When it's Villa at home, tricky. Brighton away, tricky. I mean, forget the Old Trafford and, you know, Tottenham Stadium and Bayern. We know that that's going to be the established starters, so to speak. But do you think that the intensity of this game, the quality of this game will have been enough that Mikel will go from, I'll throw him a start at Luton to, I'll give him a start at Wolves away, or I'll go with him from the start at the Allianz? Because I think if you're a Smith Rowe, you're just trying to be in the thoughts. If you're a Reece Nelson, you're trying to be in the thoughts. If you're a Zinchenko or a Thomas Partey, you're thinking, all right, I'm going to earn my starting role back, right? That's the platform you've been given. So what do you think? Is there enough here for Mikel to really develop the trust he needs to turn to these players when the heat is much higher than it was against Luton?
Yeah, there's different flavors of players that started this game. That's the thing, and actually, I think we have, maybe it's just because it's a bit of a unique season where all three of the promoted teams are below the level, really. But like, look at Sheffield United at home. We played Eddie. He got his hat trick. Brilliant, right? Hasn't really done anything for Eddie Nketiah's Arsenal career in the long term, but it meant that day we didn't have to play Gabriel Jesus. He might even have been injured, actually. Like, it, because, like, Reece Nelson starting this game, let's take him. Reece Nelson did not start because Mikel Arteta is interested in Reece Nelson. Sorry. We know by now. He's not going, ooh, if I play Reece, maybe, you know, maybe I've seen something in training. Reece Nelson played so that someone Mikel Arteta does value and trust didn't have to. Same reason Nketiah played and got his hat-trick against Sheffield United. Lovely. Got him in England call-up. Fantastic. But it wasn't really about Eddie Nketiah's long-term future. It was about not playing some of the bigger guys and feeling like he could do that in that game. And, you know, so then you come on to, and then there's like Zinchenko and Partey who not fit, not really been able to play. Jesus didn't get on in this game, and I'm sure Arsenal probably would have liked to have given him. There are so many players like Vieira and Jesus. They probably could have done with 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
We seem to have so many players in that box at the moment that we can't do it for all of them. And even Nketiah coming on in this game, I don't think that was about, I think Eddie Nketiah can change this game. I think it was about, I can put Eddie on and I can give Jesus the whole night off because we're 2-0 up and I can probably just give him the night off. So it's not about those guys. It's about like giving, you know, protecting the guys that the manager does trust. The player, and Zinchenko and Partey, like Clive said, maybe they're players we've moved past. I think Partey probably is. Zinchenko, I think, is more of a question mark. The player that comes out of this who is the most interesting is Emile Smith Rowe because he plays really well. And, you know, if Kai Havertz is a striker now, then that left eight role, maybe it's a bit more there than it was. And look at the games he started, right? He started, what, Nottingham Forest, Sheffield United, Luton. So like that kind of tells you about his status. This doesn't mean he's going to start the next game. But to your point, Elliot, what it might mean, he might get 20 minutes in the next one. He might get 30 minutes in the next one instead of being an unused sub, which is largely what happens now. And for him, I think a big, Big's overstating it, a boon, as it were, because he started ahead of Fabio Vieira. Fabio Vieira could have played that position, but he chose Smith Rowe instead. And Smith Rowe, and Arteta referenced his off-ball work as well after the game, which was really strong, and I think that's the thing that keeps him out of the team. So he's the most interesting one to me. Zinchenko and Partey, it's about can you be closers for us. Nelson and Nketiah, I just don't think they're going to have any role to play. I think Smith Rowe was in that basket, but he might have got himself into the finisher's basket.
Yeah, and to be fair, I mean, he gives Reece Nelson this start, and it may be a chance for him to sort of pat Reece Nelson on the back and say thanks for your service, because if the team stays roughly like this in a big game, let's say Saka is back in this team, look on that bench and look on that pitch because one of those players isn't making the matchday squad. That means either a Reece or an Nketiah or a Fabio Vieira. Like, one of them isn't even making the bench. You know, it's funny because people would get mad at, like, Pep Guardiola for what he did to Calvin Phillips, you know, but you start to look at it and you say, well, if your team is deep enough and you stay heavy and healthy enough, you're going to be in a situation where there's somebody in that squad who's not getting the minutes that someone thinks they deserve, and who would want to be a manager, because it gets really tricky. So, Clive, I think we should zero in on the man of the match, though, which was Emil Smith Rowe, and then we can get to a couple of the other performances, because I think there are interesting ones across all four of the players that came in. But Smith Rowe was man of the match. I would say that I have mixed feelings about the performance. I'll explain why in a moment. But it does give Mikel an opportunity, because if he wants to play Rice at six, for example, and he wants his eights to have that injection of maybe more attacking directness, Emil Smith Rowe is that guy. I mean, that's what he is. Everything is direct. Everything is straightforward. Everything is done at tempo. You know, I'll read to you his comments on Smith Rowe, on whether tonight's game will improve Smith Rowe's confidence. I think a lot. I love him as a player. It's a joy to watch him, how he moves, how he changes direction, how physical he was today as well without the ball. He won a lot of duels, and he was thinking with that killer instinct to play forward and to make things happen. And when Emil is in that moment, it's very difficult to stop him. Today, he helped us a lot to win the game. He had a pressing recovery, a counter-press recovery, leading to Odegaard's goal. He played the quote-unquote assist for the own goal. He had a great shot from close range, as I mentioned, from a thrilling Odegaard pass that very nearly was his own goal. His own goal. So he was very much involved. Mikel used to talk about Emil as he has to apply himself, he has to do it consistently. This is much more unfiltered praise, which I think is interesting. And yet, as Emil acknowledged, on 55 minutes he was cramping up. You know, and had to come off. So what do we think, Clive? I think everybody's excited to see Emil Smith Rowe put together a performance like that from the start, something he hasn't done in a long time. What did you think of the performance itself, but also what does that herald for the remainder of the season and his role, if he has one?
Yeah, so for those that know me, I'm not a big fan of these number 10s type players. I prefer...
Flash, see you next Tuesdays. That's what you always call them to me. Every time around, Flash.
GPS barely moving, just waiting for the ball to feet. When it's off the ball, someone else's job, mate, just give it to me so I can turn around and run 10 yards and drop it off. Nah, it's not for me. And so... This is my favourite Smith Rowe game of the season. I'm not one of those fans that cheer when he runs up and down the bench when he could come on as a substitute. Nah, that's not for me. You've got to do it. And you've got to do it on and off the ball. Right? So this is the first time I saw him off the ball at all playing for Arsenal. He didn't know where to stand defensively. If you know what to do off the ball, you've got a chance of playing this team. You really have. And this is the best I've seen him off the ball. This season, his best performance by a mile. I don't think he's man of the match. That was a skipper. But we all got our choices, right? But I thought he did really well. For 50 minutes, Elliot, you nailed it. And this is the problem. Athletically, he He hasn't shown for a long time he can play at the level in the Premier League and sustain it for a long time. He hasn't done it. And he's building his minutes. He's building his body, as are other players. I've got to be fair. I want to be fair to them. I've got to be fair to him. But he's 23 and he's playing for his future. Right? And I thought it was the best example of him this year. Forget all the flashy runs and the shots and the curling and the nearly goals we're in the season. You can't rock up to Arsenal and just have one side of your game. Not anymore. Not in this team. In the old team you could, not in this team. And I thought he really adapted to, he showed the intelligence to adapt to what he needed to do for this group. And I was really impressed with him. And the reason why I was impressed with him, and it, not just on outcome and outputs, I like to see someone with the intelligence to work out, this is what I need to do to grab an opportunity. When in life, when you want to grab an opportunity, you have to exceed people's expectations. You can't rock up and show what you always did. That's not enough to make people turn and look at you in a different way. You have to do things that you've never done before. You have to do them really, really well. And that's what I saw in his game yesterday. I don't care that he cramped up, because I knew that anyway before the game. My line has always been, he needs to go to David Lloyd's. That's all he needs to do, and then he can play for Arsenal. Right? So I knew that was going to be a problem for him. I don't think he's strong athletically as he used to be, and that's something he needs to build up over time because he's been injured for so long. But he had the intelligence to work out there, two sides of his game. I'm going to impact it in the best way. In fact, the first goal does not happen without him. And I would never have thought Smith Rowe would be smashing someone in centre midfield and getting a counter press on, and we go two passes later, we score. So fair play to him. I thought he did really, really well.
Yeah, I think the other thing, let's be clear. No one has ever had any doubt in Emil Smith Rowe once the ball's at his feet. You know what I mean? That's just never been in doubt, at least not for me. I think a lot of us have suspected the reason Smith Rowe doesn't play more, fitness aside, is what happens when he doesn't have the ball at all, when Arsenal don't have the ball. You don't get to be, quote, the best out-of-possession team in the world if you don't have the best out-of-possession players in the world. You know who the best out-of-possession player in the world is? It's Declan Rice. It's Martin Odegaard. They're absolutely elite at it. It's guys like Saliba and Gabriel and White. You know, that has changed our world, changed our lives because of how good they are at it. It's just a complete transformation in who we are. And Emil Smith Rowe needs to be able to do that. And I thought we saw a bit more of that in this game. Certainly the flashy one was the one where he took the ball for the Odegaard goal. But I think it was great. But it's funny, Clive, because you said the exact thing I was going to say, which is at 23 years old, at the tail end of the season, for a player that's trying to play for a team that thinks of itself as one of the best in the world, 55 minutes doesn't get the job done. You've got to be able to step on the pitch from the start and go 90 if needed. And this is he does not have that yet. Now, maybe that's harsh. He's building up fitness. But you also can't be forever building up fitness. So this is a wonderful performance. But if I'm really honest, I think it is a performance that will give Mikel confidence using him. But I don't know that it'll give him confidence starting him, because I don't think you can start a guy that you know you can't play the whole game, because that's a sub you literally lose just by starting that player. So, Tim, am I being harsh? I mean, I want to be clear. Loved the performance when he had it going, especially in that first half when I think the game was live. The game was dead in the second half. But I don't think you can be a 55-minute player and expect to get picked from the start. And maybe he'll have that fitness next season for us or somewhere else. But I think this simultaneously put him more in the manager's thoughts, but less in the manager's thoughts as a starter, if that makes sense.
Yeah, like as a starter, probably not. And I think it's completely understandable because, like, you know, he started three games this season. Perhaps if we'd been in the Europa League, he'd have 10 games in his legs instead of three. But we're not.
Good point.
We're not there anymore.
Thank God.
So, yeah, indeed. Same with Fabio Vieira. Well, to be fair, Fabio Vieira was injured, but that's why it's becoming more difficult for some of these guys to get those kind of games. So. Like I said, I think realistically, particularly with the stage of the season we're at, he hasn't got time to get that, and we don't have the games to give him to get that. What he can aspire to be is a finisher, is a closer, whatever you want to call it. Like to be in that group, to get out of the Nelson, Nketiah, Elneny kind of thanks, put the orange, you know, put the drinks out on the touchline and slice the oranges at half time. Like that's what he wants to get out of. Realistically, he hasn't got the time to become a starter. Like he's not going to do, I don't think, like a Kivior, where Kivior was in that kind of a little bit circling that drain, and then suddenly two people got injured and he got his chance. That's the only way it's going to happen for Smith Rowe at this stage of the season. But that can still be really valuable, because being a finisher as well, it doesn't just mean Arsenal might be 3-0 up and you can take minutes off someone. You know, this performance is more like maybe it's 1-1 with 25 minutes to go on Saturday. And we want someone, and we need someone to inject something into the game who's not a zero off the ball. And, you know, at the moment, realistically, he's probably vying a little bit with Fabio Vieira. And you know, he got the start ahead of him last night. Fabio Vieira didn't get on the pitch at all. So he's got to build that. The next rung in the ladder is not a starter, though. Like the squad's just too big and competitive for that. Like his aspiration now has to be, you know, what was it Arteta was talking about in the build up to this game about moments as well. He's talking about the Reece Nelson goal last season. He was kind of saying, like, if you get 5 minutes, you have to make those 5 minutes count. And, you know, Arteta said something like, one moment can turn your whole season around. And again, can Smith Rowe get one of those moments? I honestly don't think he can get much more than that. And I think we are in the last weeks probably of his Arsenal career. But like he's at least playing for his future probably somewhere else. And he could leave us with a big memory, because there are going to be plenty of opportunities for that to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, to your point, Mikel in the build-up to the game talked about Reece Nelson having that moment last season. And it's his best Arsenal moment of his career. And it only took a few minutes to have it. I thought this was a lovely performance from Smith Rowe. I don't think it was flawless, but I think it was a chance for him to play under the lights in front of an adoring Emirates crowd and pick up a Man of the Match award. And I thought he did what he needed to do out there for the most part. It is easy to root for players and see the best in them and want the most from them. But when you think about the strongest Arsenal 11 that we can put out and the way we play, I don't know. I think there is still that extra intensity and edge. And one of the things that's very different, though, of course, we've been using Declan Rice at left eight quite a bit. And you think about that physicality and what that gets you in terms of ball recoveries and counter-pressing and the ability to drop in and sit next to Jorginho if he needs to in the low block and then, you know, burst out of his hole and chase someone down, and compare that with an Emile Smith Rowe. These are just totally different profiles of what you get in that position. And that leads to something I want to ask you about that's more general, and then we'll get back to the player side, Clive, though, which is a huge credit to Mikel and the squad he's built and the way we can play. And it's something Rob Edwards said. So you already covered that Rob Edwards said Arsenal don't give anything away. Another game, by the way, where it's under 0.3 expected goals against, a clean sheet, one shot on target, five shots the whole game. We sort of roll our eyes at this now. We expect it. But I remember an Arsenal giving away 30 shots to Watford, right? Like, I remember the Southampton game last season. This is new, okay? This is new. But the other thing that Rob Edwards said is, of the three challengers, they are the one that can play any game. If it's a physical game, if it's a running game, if it's a footballing game, whatever it is, they've got the answer. What do you think of that, Clive? That we went from a Mikel Arteta team that I think sometimes got criticized for being too robotic, can only play one way, there's plan A, and more plan A, to now a team being praised for being able to play whatever type of game is presented to them, and what that means for us in terms of being able to tackle different types of opposition.
Yeah, it's been clear, isn't it, throughout this season, how he's built the team. You know, even back to the goalkeeper, that means we have more control at the base of the team, which means as teams press us, we can do things back there. And there's this, obviously, you can always press into his weak foot, but it doesn't matter. We're still better than we were last season. We could always play out. We've got the ability to really press high on Declan Rice. He started from the Community Shield. Look how we played in that game. Declan Rice being in front of parties, that's 1+1. And he was pressing into Man City on the first game. Our build-up system has changed with Zinchenko coming out a little bit more. Kivior, Tomiyasu sharing them roles on the left-hand side, so we got much more of a cradle to the team. It's been, you know, we lacked a bit of build-up during this season. It's really funny. We go through phases as fans. So we went through the, we're playing too slow outside the block phase. And then we went to the, we're okay, but we're just not clicking. We're not scoring enough goals, you know, for our play. We kept missing chances. And then we went to, we're scoring now, but we keep scoring in set pieces. We've just set piece Arsenal. You know what I mean? And then we thought, sod you lot, we'll just show you what you got. 5-6, whatever it was, 4. And now the whole thing come together. And now it's like, okay, we're not only winning 4s and 5s, but we're not conceding anything. You know, and it, for me, it comes back to the type of players that you bring in. If you bring in the right physical and technical profiles, and for me, the number one thing in this team is IQ, intelligence, recognition what your relationships are doing. If one player does X, another player does Y, automatically, no ego, they just do it. They just do it. And it's great to see. And then the Man City game wasn't a masterclass, everyone else who's a neutral. But to me, it was a game of sacrifice. Players sacrifice themselves outside their normal game. And you only do that for people that you like. You do that for a manager that you like, that you respect. You don't do it when you, well, just look at Manchester United. Look at the disparate islands running around that pitch doing their own thing. You know, it's always about that collective for me. And that's why I was a bit sensitive at the weekend around picking on players, because I thought that's one of the best collective performances we put in place for many a year. Right, in the most, in the hardest place in the world to play football. Discussed of twos and throws later on where we were going. So, yeah, I like this team, Elliot. I like them. You know, I like big teams. I like teams that care about the other side to the game. When you're a player, you're off the ball 87, 88 minutes of the game. If you disrespect that side of the game, you are not a player. Right? You're just someone running around waiting for the ball. Mm. You know, so, and Mikel Arteta and this team respect all facets of the game. I mean, it's obvious to us. We can see it now, can't we, all of us?
Yeah, I would love to sit down and pick Mikel Arteta's brain about this game. And I wondered just how much he liked it or didn't like it or what he felt about it. I mean, I have never seen an Arsenal capable of producing this perfunctory, a comfortable victory in the Premier League. And I mean, it's just what the doctor ordered. You think about how intense the next few weeks are going to be. Can you imagine the luxury of having a game at this stage of the season that's that dull, quiet, low key, low stress, heavy rotation, everyone gets a kick, nobody has to exert themselves too much? Martin Odegaard lost 6 duels. He was 1 of 7 in duels. I still think he had the best performance on the night, by the way, but like, you know why Martin Odegaard lost that many duels? Because I think Martin Odegaard was like, okay, you can have this one, mate. I'm just here to direct traffic, score a stunning goal, and get us out of here in one piece. One bad news from this game, Kai Havertz gets a yellow for diving. And whether you think it was the right call or not the right call, he's now on the razor's edge. One more yellow and he misses 2 games. Now that resets after match week 32 and we've played 30 games. So the next 2 games, okay, Kai Havertz has to either, he has to not pick up a yellow card and then he's fine. Or if he picks up a yellow card, he's going to miss 2. And this is where you get into a little bit of, you know, maybe overthinking it. I don't know. It depends what you think. But like, the next game is Brighton. The next game is Villa. The next game is Wolves. And then it's Chelsea and Spurs. So you could play him against Brighton, knowing that if he gets a yellow card, he misses Villa at home, Wolves away, but he's back for Chelsea. You could rest him against Brighton and Villa, and then know you have him for Wolves away and Chelsea away. But I don't know that Mikel wants to just tie his shoelaces together like that and not have Kai Havertz for 2 games. So super quick, Tim, I don't want to go deep on this. Would you try to keep Kai out of the firing line, use him against Bayern, not use him against Villa or Brighton, and just try to avoid the 2-game ban? Would you use him at Brighton and be like, hey, grab your yellow card here. We'll lose you for Villa and Wolves, will use you against Bayern, but then you're good for the Chelsea and Spurs games. Like, how are you trying to navigate him being on a yellow? Because he does seem like he's a player who's going to pick one up. It's just in his game, the way he challenges from behind, the way he, you know, is physical with his elbows and jumping and stuff. So how would you try to navigate that concern?
Yeah, I think it's probably about time for him, just for physical reasons, to come out of the team for a game anyway. Not because I think he's playing badly or anything, but we've got Gabriel Jesus sitting there, like, you know, Smith Rowe played really well in this game. So, like, he can't play every game until the end of the season. He's played a lot of football recently. Like, if he's, you know, on the bench against Brighton on Saturday and we bring him on, I kind of think that's fine. I think it shouldn't be too difficult for him to manage because he's a forward. And, you know, he's not, yeah, he gets a lot of yellow cards for the reasons you've said. But, you know, I think it should be reasonably easy for him to walk that tightrope, because they're not maybe they are sometimes counter-attacking fouls, but you know what I mean? He's not a centre-back. He's not playing in central midfield, like smashing into people. Like, I'd feel more concerned if it was Declan Rice or William Saliba or Gabriel. So I think it should be controllable. But I kind of think either for Brighton or Villa, he should probably be on the bench for one of those games anyway.
Mm. It's going to depend a lot on what he wants to do against Bayern too, right? I mean, we haven't seen a lot of Gabriel Jesus at center forward, Clive. Like, that's just not a thing we've seen a lot. And I was kind of hoping Jesus would start at center forward in this game to get a look at it, because we love Kai. He's playing great. He's come around to become one of the heroes of the season for sure. But in the back of my mind, I still think Gabriel Jesus might be our best center forward. I do. I have an affinity for the player, and they're different kinds of players, so they're going to thrive in different kinds of environments. But he's torn up the Champions League in his career. And so surely there's at least an inkling that we might want to use him in that competition. I think I would have liked to have gotten a look at him at center forward in a game like this. But what's your take on that, navigating Kai's yellow card situation and Jesus sitting there ready to be picked for the position that he transformed early last season?
Yeah, so I don't think Jesus is a better centre forward than Kai at the moment. I think our best two offensive players are the skipper and Kai, because the others are not healthy. In Saka and Martinelli and Jesus, they're not quite healthy. I think I sort of agree with Tim. I think Kai will be rested on the weekend. I think Jesus will come in. That's part of the reason why I think he sat. Also, Kai played two internationals, 70-plus minutes both times in the national break, as did Declan Rice. And I think he has to rest him for this game. And also, we're playing Bayern Munich. The German Bayern Munich. You think he's not going to be involved in them games? He's going to be involved in them games significantly, right? So,
shame it's not like the Austrian Bayern Munich or something, or the Bulgarian Bayern Munich. It'd be easier to beat, I guess.
He will be looking forward to them games massively. And so this is why I've got a little theory, actually. I think we're going to see Fabio Vieira have some minutes in this game at the weekend. You know, I can see it, right? Odegaard had two big internationals over the international break. I don't know how he managed to play that game last night. You know, I just don't know how he does it, you know. So Fabio Vieira is being put in a little, it just comes to be sat there ready and waiting to come into this group. And I think that's the way it should go. I don't think it's hierarchy. I think it's planned. I think it's strategic. Smith Rowe was perfect for Luton at home, coming off that side. I thought he blended really well with Trossard. In fact, I could barely see a difference between them on occasions. They were rotating around. And I looked at Smith Rowe on the outside and I thought, maybe you're not dead on the left-hand side, you know, as an exterior. Because he looked a bit sharper, you know, and they moved inside and rotated really nicely. So, yeah, I think he's gonna rest, mate. I think he's a very important player, as they all are. And this is the key. We have to stop selecting teams and recognising there are minutes and load we have to manage. And we saw that it happened yesterday. The minutes load was perfect. Party an hour. Building up Tomiyasu slowly. Kivior had 120 minutes playing for Poland against Wales. They qualified. He looked, you know, a little bit tired. Off after an hour at City. Rested, completely rested. He's coming back at the weekend, mate. He's coming back, you know. And that's what we want, isn't it? It's what we've all wanted, isn't it? Smart rotation and usage of minutes. And I think so far so good.
Yeah, well said. We got to talk Thomas Partey. So before we do that, I've got to tell you about a company that I am literally required to tell you about as part of my job. However, what I can say is, while you're busy tuning out my droning voice, it's a perfect opportunity to go to justgiving.com/page/AVP and give. How about that? Instead of just tuning me out completely, just tune me out while you're doing something that is rewarding and might lead to you getting a VIP ticket to the Bournemouth game. So with that having been said.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I can now tell you about one of the newer names here to the Arsenal Vision Podcast. That's Unified. U-N-I-F-Y-D. Unified. Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me. Now, see, they've written that. How do they know that I am not both a podcaster and a world-class athlete? Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. We all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of the Arsenal Vision Podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by the Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, you want to listen up. The technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in the United States or in hundreds of other locations around the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable, which is good for everybody. So, interested in experiencing the EE system technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/arsenalvision to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/arsenalvision. Now, here's the part that I was born to do. No material or testimonials in the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment, and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system. Live! Is that enough of that?
Indeed.
Now that, I mean, just born to read disclaimers. If that isn't on my headstone, then nothing should be on it. Or, you know, something else. Whatever you decide. Okay. Tim, I'm going to do something to drive Clive nuts and give you the first shot at talking about Thomas Partey. It is interesting, right? Because a fit firing Thomas Partey playing with Declan Rice and Martin Odegaard, that is the midfield we were dreaming of in July and August. We basically haven't seen it. I'm kind of surprised that Partey didn't stay on when Rice came on to kind of get a look at the Rice Odegaard Partey trio, just as like a little bit of a glimpse, you know. But then you forget Mikel's training sessions probably aren't little jog arounds. He's getting good looks in training at what these different alignments could deliver. I know that it is unlikely that Thomas Partey is going to get to a level this season where he's just back in the starting lineup playing every game. But based on what you saw, what are some of the things you liked in this performance from Partey? What are some of the things you think are still either not there or need to be there for him to come in and become a bedrock of the midfield like he's been in the past, if that's possible, you know?
Yeah, sure. I think personally, emotionally, I moved beyond this player a long time ago, and have to admit, wasn't hugely invested in his performance or in him being like a key player for Arsenal. I think I understand why he started, and I think him starting was more about at this stage, you know, again, can you be a closer? Can you play the last 20 minutes I'm not convinced we'll see him start unless something happens to Jorginho. I still think that Jorginho and Rice, or Rice at the base with Havertz and Odegaard, I still think those are going to be the two preferred midfield combinations. I think, look, Partey's passing is very, very good. Physically, to me, he looks... I mean, look, I can't say he's done, but I think this season, with the amount of time we've got left, I don't think he has the time, and I don't think we have the games to give him for him to really come up to the level physically. And physically, he does look below it to me. It does look like he gets run past still, I think, a little bit too easily, as much as he's good on the ball. I know people have that anxiety about Jorginho because I think there's a fairly simple calculation made, which is Jorginho not fast, Jorginho therefore will get run past. And I just very rarely see it happen because I think his positioning's so good, and actually we don't give the ball away anyway when we have him in the team. I think Partey, you get better passes, you get higher value passes, but they're also riskier passes. And I think teams can break on you sometimes. Mm. And when that happens, I don't think Partey any longer looks to me like he has the physicality to recover in those situations. So he has to be perfect on the ball. And I don't think he ever quite has been. He's very, very good on it. I don't think he's ever been perfect. But I mean, clearly, Arteta started him because he wants him to be a part of the remainder of the season. But I can't really see him starting a game. I didn't see enough last night to suggest that he can do that. And yeah, he's a player that psychologically I've maybe discarded is too strong a word, but I wasn't like, oh, I can't wait to see Partey. Like, for me, I think Jorginho's taken his place, and I think Partey, really shouldn't be at the club anymore. And we really, I think, messed up by not making more of an effort to move him on last summer.
You won't be alone in that analysis and that feeling. I think we are where we are now, though, and all that matters is how we manage the next 6 weeks. And so I think there's an interesting point here. He came on as a sub against City. So clearly there's a trust there. He would not have come on if there was no trust there. Then he starts this game. And if you say, well, why is Mikel working to build up his fitness? Why a sub then start? I think Mikel has probably rightly assessed Jorginho is not going to play every three games, and Partey is not going to play every three games. Neither of those players at this stage of their career and their current state are going to be able to play consecutive games in this run-in. But what if Partey starts, then Jorginho starts, then Partey starts, then Jorginho, right? And you get the best that's available out of each of those players. A fit Thomas Partey, while maybe not the player he was at his absolute peak, because let's face it, right? He is through so much injury now and so much time not playing, and just by natural aging process, he's not going to be at his absolute best. But Clive, I do think that a fit Partey gives Mikel the ability to use Jorginho tactically in the games he needs Jorginho, and use Thomas Partey in the other games, and know that the level can stay high. And so the real question to me here isn't, is Thomas Partey washed, or is he done? Is any good? Because I think that's hyperbole. I think the real question is, did we see enough from him for Mikel to employ a tactic like that where he can kind of alternate the use of those two players who both need to be managed through the rest of the season?
Yeah, it seems clear to me that he's trying to build the player up, back him, build him up again, gently and carefully, mm-hmm. like we're doing with Tomiyasu as well, and like we're doing with Zinchenko as well. They're three players that have really suffered injuries out of nowhere sometimes. You know, a little strain here, you don't see them for like 6 weeks, 2 months, you know, and it's like, and they're trying to manage that appropriately. I think people, obviously Tim likes Jorginho, and I like Jorginho, but he can't play regularly. He just can't. So you better reinvest in Thomas Partey, because we're going to need him. We're going to need him to end games or start games to come after an hour. And when I watched him yesterday, and I like the player, but I'm not blind. I can see the midfield was in front of me in the first half, and everyone was a mile away from him. And if you were asking me honestly a year or so ago, I'd say, no problem, he can cover that. I'm looking at it today, I'm thinking, can you just tuck in a little bit? Just a little bit? Because I'm not sure at this stage he can get there. You know what I mean? However, on the ball, I thought he was a little bit tentative on occasions, particularly early on, but a few of them were. And then he started to go. And then he started to roll. And it's almost like a drum beat that starts. And then the team starts to move alongside what he's trying to do. I used this phrase at the start of the season, the team was still playing to Partey's beat. We were trying ways to get him in, that right back, because they play to his beat on a ball progression side of things. And then we changed beats when he came out, and we were a little bit outside of the block, and we went into wide areas early. And then we're all talking about people are doubling up on our wingers, and we've lost it. We've been rumbled. Then we brought ball progression back, and then we went to another way. It's all part of it for me. At this moment in time, I've never felt he's got 1 year to go on his contract. I've always felt this could have been his last year. I read some quotes today. Maybe not. Maybe that's just him trying to get his contract, but who knows? trying to get his money, but who knows? But it's quite difficult for me to opine on him because there are people that think like Tim. And me and Tim, we respect each other hugely, but he's not the only one that thinks that way. You know? Mm. And there are some people that have checked out on him, and we know the reasons why. We know the reasons why, whether they're true or not. We know the reasons why. They've checked out on him, and there's a huge amount of disrespect. There's also a huge amount of respect, sometimes over-respect, for his footballing ability. I try to look at my football with my eyes, and I really, as a football player, the Rice Party combination, if they were both super fit, as they were in the Community Shield, mate, they can go anywhere in the world. I've not heard Mikel Arteta say a negative word about him. He wants him in his group. The players want him in his group. So I look away from online and what people are thinking, and I look at the relationships on the pitch and how many times he gets the ball from his teammates and how they move when he gets the ball. And I don't see any changes in that. I just wish he was 28 and had no injury issues, because we would not be going into centre midfield transfer market this summer. But the fact that he is, and we've all got to accept, the team is evolving away from certain people, and I can see it too. But George, it's not evolving to Jorginho. Do you see what I mean? It's not evolving to him. So we have to use them as a combination. We have to get the most out of them. And this is the best way to do it. By building up one, you can have two players to sit next to Rice in certain scenarios, whether they're closing scenarios, starting scenario. I can think of a scenario here, right? If he gets fitter, really fit, that Jorginho could start the Bayern home game. I want him to. You know, I generally want him to start the Bayern home game. The Bayern away game, 1 week later, I'm not so sure. So these minutes of Thomas Partey are really important. You know, if he can get there, and if he does get there, we'll all be saying, you know what, we need Partey for away at Bayern Munich. Do you see what I mean? But right now, I'm not saying that yet, because he's not quite there, but he's improving game on game. And you have to be honest and say that he's getting better and better and better, and he's being built up. So let's see where he ends up by the end of the season.
Well, can I stay with you for a second, Clive, on something tactical then? Because I think this is the thing that really has to inform your analysis of this game. If we had just brought Thomas Partey into the usual quote-unquote starting 11 for Jorginho, right? Just Partey in, Jorginho out. That's one thing. This was a very different Arsenal. This was a box midfield with the left back inverting and the right back staying wide. That is not what we've been doing. When Kivior plays, White comes inside more, or sometimes we stay with wide fullbacks and we don't have a box in midfield. And we did have a box in this game. It was Zinchenko stepping inside like he always does. He was next to Thomas Partey. Odegaard and Emil Smith Rowe in front of them. That's a lot of change, not just in personnel, but in approach. Now we're left side dominant instead of right side dominant. And oh, by the way, there's no Bukayo Saka over there. So you're just going to see a little bit of disorganization, lack of automatism, a lack of the usual coordination as a result of that change. But, you know, when you look at it, Thomas Partey completes 93% of his passes. Alexander Zinchenko leads us in progressive passes, right? And yet there was this feeling that we were disjointed. But is that feeling down to individuals or down to a complete shift in what we did with a totally changed lineup? So do you have to remind yourself sometimes when you're analyzing individuals that what you are analyzing is a collective playing very differently with different groups, and understand the impact of that tactical change and how you're going to look at these individual performances?
That's what you have to, Elliot, all the time, mate. Not sometimes, all the time. You know, and at the weekend, we couldn't exit our left-hand side, could we? Couldn't exit our left-hand side. We brought Jesus in. He was an extra defender. And we didn't have Martinelli. And we all spoke about Martinelli, how much we missed him. Why? Because he's our exit. In this game, Reece decided he didn't fancy running in behind. And so Thomas Partey on the right-hand side, shake and bake, looks up for a little chip pass. No chip pass on the right-hand side. Saliba looks for a little chip pass. What's he have to do? No chip pass. I'll tell you what I'll do. I have to run it out and nearly gets booked going into a challenge because he overran it, right? So the exits weren't there and they weren't the same. But that's fine. And this is why I didn't mind the first 5 minutes, everyone walking around on eggshells, passing the ball to each other, because they're just trying to get their rhythm. That's much better than Southampton at home, wasn't it, last year? It's much better than that, going 1-0 down the first minute because you're not doing things correctly. You're taking risks in the wrong areas. You're 1-0 down and our lives changed on that day, right? This is a much more professional team, taking the game in phases. First 10, we just pass the ball. Then we get into our rhythm, then we go. You know, so I was really impressed how we approached this. I think you're absolutely right, Elliot. But in the end, I'm not judging him on a perfect day. I'm judging him saying, you got 5 or 10 minutes in the first game, you got 15, 20 in the second game, and you got 60 minutes in this game. Let's wait for the injury report to come out, shall we? If he's fit, at the weekend, I think he's down to 15. Do you see what I mean? Who knows what could happen? It's about building these guys up, and we're playing, I know it sounds obvious, I don't want to say these words, playing every 3-4 days, mate. We're going to need them all. No. So my, who I'm invested in and who I'm not invested in don't mean shit. What really matters is we've got 90 minutes, we've got 5 subs, we've got 90 minutes on the pitch, and we need to win these games. We really need to win these games. And no one can tell me that Thomas Partey, Zinchenko, Gabriel Jesus, Tomiyasu are not going to play a part. They're going to play a massive part, and we need to just hope they're healthy to do it.
Yeah, well said. Look, it's really easy to just scan the Arsenal squad and you see 23 years old, 24, 22, 23, 25, 24, 26. And then you see 31-year-old Jorginho and a whisker away from 31-year-old Thomas Partey. And it stands out like sore thumb. Not because they're bad, but just because they're ancient. I mean, gosh, I remember how hard it was to be 31.
I think they're really young. I think they're really young. I was in my peak at 31.
Yeah, but that was a peak for going clubbing. It's a little bit different. Tim, I'm going to tell you a stat about Reece Nelson's performance.
Oh, please
for
do.
For me, sums I know up which one the it performance. Is. I bet you don't.
Is it the 100% passing?
Yes. Oh, my gosh, you're such a smart guy. I knew I liked podcasting with you. Reece Nelson attempted 33 passes and completed 33 passes. And that to me sums up the mindset Reece Nelson started this game with. Boss, I can be secure. Boss, I won't turn it over. Boss, I can be positionally sound. Boss, I can do the simple stuff. When Reece Nelson gave me one of the best moments of my life against Bournemouth, he popped off the screen. When Reece Nelson came on against Southampton in the 3-3, he popped off the, well, I say the popped off the screen in Bournemouth, popped off my eyeballs because I was at the Emirates. Southampton popped off the screen through blurry vision at the Globe in Chicago. We have our Chicago event coming up again, by the way, later this April. You can check that out. But my point is, like, this is a player who, for me, when he comes on as a sub, and granted, a lot of times it's off the left, but he is typified by directness, dynamism, energy. And in this game, it was very much the opposite. A mindset of stay in structure, don't give it away. I have never seen a talented, dynamic, wide player wall pass the ball so many times with other things on. And you contrast that with Smith Rowe, who brought his personality to the game. Right? The reason you're in a team is because you have a personality and you have a talent. You have a skill set that stands out in that team. Smith Rowe played like someone who understands what his unique skill set is. Reece Nelson played like a guy who understood that he needed to just not do anything wrong. And I think that was to his detriment, unfortunately. I'm not killing the guy, obviously, but it's a performance that I think, unfortunately, will not elevate his opportunities the balance of the season. Is that fair enough?
Yeah, absolutely. It was like first day at the office stuff, wasn't it? Like yeah. My phone staying in my pocket, not getting caught looking at that today, kind of thing. Like not clicking the internet browser open today. I'll wait till I've been here. Wait till I've passed probation before, you know, I bend some rules and whatnot. And essentially, you don't really want your winger having 100% pass completion, do you? Look, some of that as well will be game state. You know, Arsenal kind of had it won reasonably early in the game as well. I do think he always has been like quite a technically clean player as well. So, and you know, like it's not like this, there were loads of dynamic runs and everything for him to try and find. So I think it was a difficult game for him to shine in, but yeah, it was a bit, I don't want to mess up kind of thing. And I think you can see that it's a player we've lost, basically. And I don't, when I say it's a player we've lost, it's a shame because I think there's more in Reece Nelson. I really do. I really think there's something in that boy. Whether it's Arsenal quality, I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if it was. But I haven't really decided whether this is part of his character, that he has a shyness, a demureness that makes him a bit like that, or whether it's just the situation at Arsenal. I do remember hearing that when he was at Feyenoord, he went to a psychologist because during the first half of his loan stint at Feyenoord, he hadn't really done very much, and he went to a psychologist, and then the second half of his loan spell, he was much, much better. So it might just be like a character thing, that he's just like in a shell a little bit, and I'm sure his situation at Arsenal has exacerbated that even more. It's just a club and a player who don't really belong together anymore. And I think Reece, from an Arsenal perspective, it's given us a bit of squad security that he did. But I did wonder why he signed that contract last summer, because I didn't really see where his kind of big opportunities were coming. And I think the thing for him now, he signed a Bosman contract at Arsenal. That's not going to be easy for him to move, I don't think, particularly with the whole PSR thing at the moment. Like, I think that's really making clubs in the area of the league he might move to really, really wary at the moment. I don't know. Maybe, look, Nottingham Forest, if they stay up, they'll probably lose Morgan Gibbs-White this summer. Maybe that makes an opening for him. I don't know. But yeah, I suspect there's a little bit of demureness in him that has so far in his career stopped him reaching his full potential. But I also just think the situation, because like, you're playing on the right wing for Arsenal in this game, that's Saka's position. Reece Nelson could have scored 5 goals and 3 assists in this game. And if Saka's 80% fit on Saturday, starting, that's just a reality. And that's probably difficult to deal with as well when you're coming in.
Yeah, I'll give him one excuse, so to speak. Not that he needs it, but as I mentioned earlier, we rocked the whole formation around to the left in this game, right? So Zinchenko was the inverted player, which meant that Trossard had a lot of the ball, saw a lot of the ball. We attacked up that side a lot more. And so I do think that, you know, Smith Rowe was on the ball a lot. We maybe were a little more left side biased in our attack, but it doesn't change the fact that he was conservative with it. I think
a part of the reason we would have been left side biased is probably something to do with Arteta's faith in him. He didn't trust him to say, no, we're going to keep that right side bias. We're going to feed you as much as we feed Saka. Like, that was, you know.
Good point.
It's a little bit like, I'm kind of protecting you by keeping the ball away from you a bit.
Method to the madness, right? I trust Leo Trossard. I know what he can do for us. I'll bring in Zinchenko. We'll attack up the left. We'll let Leo and Smith Rowe be more of the attacking impetus and go the other way. It's just so interesting how a season, though, changes so much. Eddie Nketiah started 10 Premier League games at striker for Arsenal this season, a season where we might win a lot of things. Who knows? And now he's coming on for, you know, sort of some sympathy minutes at the end against Luton, and it's not really, he doesn't look in the plan so much. And that's not knocking Eddie. It's just the point that your situation at a club changes so fast.
That's football, and, isn't it? That's football. It's okay. Eddie and Kate is a lot more successful at football than I've ever been, right? And he's played for England. So we have to get our heads on this properly. It's just elite sport. It doesn't stay the
level
same.
Just keeps going up, though. And not everybody can go up the next rung of the ladder. There's
Premier
nothing
League
wrong
players
with it.
Still, like Eddie Nketiah and Reece Nelson, if they move on this summer, they'll play in the Premier League. Like,
I think so.
That's that's a mad level to be at. Like, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's when we critique these players, it's sometimes always good to remind ourselves they are the 0.01% that actually got to be professionals. And then they go even lower to get to the Premier League. I mean, crikey, in the global game, that their careers are huge successes. Huge successes. We're just talking about a team that's improving and they were judging accordingly. And that's it.
Eventually, as the level goes up and up and up and up, you leave some very good players behind. You know, I don't think that's a discredit to those players either, by the way. So
Smith Rowe's got number 10 shirt on his back, right? Remember he signed that contract? He's got number 10 shirt on his back. And we are literally saying here, was he playing for a shop window? Is he going to be going? And that's all happened in 2.5 years. Right? So there you go. It changes. And that's just...
I mean, we moved away from Aaron Ramsdale. You know?
Yeah.
Like... It can blow your mind what it takes to be at this level sometimes. All right, look, there's probably more we could dig into Zinchenko. We could talk about Odegaard just being brilliant and playing 90 minutes every game. But I think I'd rather quickly turn our attention to Brighton at the weekend, Clive, because this was a nothing game. It really was a nothing game. And by the way, I've seen us lose to Hull in a season they were relegated. I've seen us drop points to Southampton in a season they were relegated when we were supposedly title contenders. I've seen us do some really dumb shit. To have a perfunctory 2-0 win in the Premier League is a credit to us, especially with rotation. But now we go away to Brighton. This is a weaker Brighton than maybe we've seen in the past, but still a very dangerous Brighton, coached by a very good manager. They don't defend particularly well, but they will carry a heck of a lot more threat than Luton did. And we go there desperately trying to focus on those 3 points, knowing that it's Bayern at the Emirates on Tuesday. As a manager, you have to thread a difficult needle to thread here, which is not transmitting looking past Brighton, not transmitting thinking about Bayern, but also picking a Brighton lineup that thinks about Bayern. You have to pick your Brighton lineup with Bayern in mind, in my view, but without leaving yourself a team that goes out there and plays like they're thinking about Bayern. So how on earth do you think he will handle that challenge? Because I think it's a big one.
Yeah, there's a few people looking a little bit tired. Ben White, he's a machine, but he looks a little bit tired towards the end. Again, he was having to do running that I didn't think he needed to do on the right-hand side because Nelson, for me, didn't move enough, didn't separate enough, didn't offer a proactive running, which made the ball came his way. I don't think we are left-sided biased because we're just left-sided biased. I think we were left-sided biased because our left side was moving better than our right side. Simple as that. We did have an exit there, so I'm not letting him off there. I thought his body language was shocking. From the moment he walked out, I wasn't impressed how he didn't grab the opportunity that was on for him. In a team that's not, when you are the athletic forward, be athletic. You know, don't be the one that's coming to the ball all the time being safe. Read the room, be athletic, stretch the play. And he didn't do that. So I see a change with Havertz. I've got this worry about Odegaard. I might have said it earlier, sorry if I'm repeating myself. I'm looking at them too, and they are massively key. They cannot do 90 at the weekend. They just can't. You know, the load on them is the biggest in recent weeks. And so we have to make a change. Jesus is sitting there. Are we prepared to do something a little bit off the wall? You know, is it Vieira? Is it Trossard in the interior? I'm not sure what it is. Where is Martinelli on his fitness? I'm not sure what it is, but I think the manager knows. Because certain people are not running up and down that touchline. I've got to give a nod to Declan Rice, by the way. I'm thinking, yeah, mate, you've been rested. Tim will tell you, because he was on that side this time. Within 2 minutes, Declan Rice has got up. No tracksuit bottoms, bib on. He's running up and down like an idiot. I think he'd done 8K on the sideline, right? So he normally does 11. I'm thinking, mate, just sit down. You don't need to play this game. He was up and down in the manager's face saying, I want to play. I mean, what?
Like the under-11s when you're on the bench and you keep warming up near the manager.
So he's pretty chilly, Elliot. He's flipping. He's got his short sleeve on and a bib, and he's got no bottoms, and he's not having it. He is up and down. Fair play to you, mate. Set an example from the sideline. And there's some players that are flipping, didn't show that much. We're on the flipping pitch. You know, so it's different. So, yeah, Brighton, we're tuned for this, aren't we? We've had two games. One game where defensive masterclass, offensive slight regrets. Another game, 75% jogging, training game, get minutes into people. Now we got Brighton in front of the nation, 5:30 Saturday night. Everyone thinks it's going to be tough. we're going to have to go. We're going to have to go full beans, right, and see what's left, and then make the change off the bench. Hence, we're back to the reason why last night was really important, because we know we can make those changes a little bit better than they were a few weeks ago, right? So we found people in this game. Did you see the sprint back from Tomiyasu in this game? When he sprinted back and recovered?
Yeah. That was a nice turn of pace, yeah.
Well, I've not seen him like that for a while. So we found him. Could he be, by and away, left back? Do you see what I mean? I think we got so many more options that we're developing based on health. And I think it's just about giving us those opportunities to get them healthy.
Yeah. I want your take on this, Tim, because this is where it gets really tricky, and it's going to be tricky the next couple of weeks, because there's no unimportant game, right? There's no game you can look past. It's interesting, right, to think about last season. Mikel tried to have it both ways in the Sporting tie, right? He rotated for the away leg, but then we didn't get the result we needed. So then he went strong in the home leg, and he lost two center backs, and he lost his season. I think you probably have to rotate, but then I look at Liverpool, I look at City, and I look at the way they've managed run-ins the last couple seasons, and you know what they do? They play the guys they think they need to play every single game for the run-in. That's what they do. Mohamed Salah started 38 games when Liverpool won the league or whatever it was, or when they went, you know, challenged, had that 97-point season, whatever the heck it was, 38 games he started, plus all the Champions League games to the end. Erling Haaland started every single Champions League game and every single Premier League game. I am torn, I will admit. I think there are some players you just say, you play every game for me. I think Martin Odegaard is going to be one of them. I really do. So what do you think is the right way to approach Brighton with Bayern in mind? Is the right way to not have Bayern in mind? You know, like if Sack is fit, he plays, everybody plays, and you play your best team playing the best way they can, and then go do it again against Bayern. I will admit, sometimes you have to hold your hand up and say, I have no idea. I genuinely have no idea. And I think the only way you could know is if you had access to the medical data and the tracking data and know who's in the red and who's not. But I do think we're going to learn some things about a few players, because to Clive's point, can Vieira come in and start a Premier League game in this run-in? You know, is he at that point? Can Gabriel Jesus come back and be a center forward for us? I don't know. I really don't know what he's going to do. What would you do?
Yeah, so I the core players, yeah, sorry guys. get the deep heat ready because that's it. Like, that's it now. And look, I don't think they'll complain about that. I don't think, you know, to Clive's point, I don't think Declan Rice is going to sulk if he's told he's got to play every minute of every game. Quite the opposite. Same with Saka. We've seen him do that year on year. Look, some of the stuff we've done to, I think we've set ourselves up well for this scenario. To your point, I don't really know. Yeah, Vieira's probably going to have to start a game somewhere. If it's not here, maybe it's Wolves, maybe it's Villa at home. I tend to think maybe Villa at home particularly, because you've got to gamify a little bit. So we gamified this game, not just because it was Luton, but Luton had loads of injuries. So it's like, this is depleted Luton. This is a gift. Take it. When we play Villa, they've got a big Europa League game just before, you know, and maybe after. I can't remember the way so they're in the middle of two big European ties as well. So that kind of equalizes the fact that we're in that situation as well. We've had Unai Emery as manager. we know how that can go. Take it. Take what's on offer. You've got to take everything that's on offer. And what I will say is, whatever we do, like, yeah, Saka, Odegaard, Rice, Gabriel, Saliba, like, you guys, your life at the moment is playing football games and then slathering on deep heat and then playing football games. That's just the way it is. That's the way it's going to be for everyone who's competing for the big prizes. Yeah, maybe we can get Vieira and Smith Rowe into a game somewhere and give Havertz like the afternoon off. Maybe Brighton's that day. Maybe Brighton's the day that Vieira starts left eight. Jesus starts up front. We have Havertz on the bench and we can bring them on if we need them for the last kind of 25 minutes or so. But what I would say is the work we've done to this point to get here, we've set ourselves up well. We took some players out of the international break and gave them their time off then. Again, to Clive's point, Declan Rice didn't get that in the international break, so we gave him this game. Saka, you know, we've treated with kid gloves a bit. Does seem like he's genuinely carrying something. Oh. And the 5 and 6 nils in February, invaluable, because we got some guys, you know, we got Saka off for a half at Sheffield United. We got some of those guys off for 30 minutes. To this point, there is not a lot more that we could have done. And we've been good with players like Zinchenko, Partey, Tomiyasu, Jesus. We haven't just thrown them straight back in the second they're 60% fit. We've been able to give them their kind of, okay, you're gonna ride the bench for a few weeks. You'll get your 20 minutes here, your 30 minutes there. Because how many times have we said this? April and May is a different season. It's, you know, it's playoff time now. It's a completely different season. And everything we've done since the new year to get to this point, I think we couldn't have done more. We couldn't have done more than stuffing teams 5 or 6 nil, taking guys out of the international break. Like, look, Ben White, you're going to play every minute of every game for the rest of the season, probably. But you had a week in Dubai because I might have escaped people's attention that he doesn't play for England at the moment. So, you know, and yeah. And so his wife's posting Instagram pictures of him playing cards in Dubai. Brilliant. Fantastic. Gamify the hell out of that situation. So you're at the stage of the season. You have to make decisions. You have to take what's on offer. And if other teams are slightly weaker, you have to be prepared to turn that dial down yourself a little bit and go, okay, this team is at 80%. We can come down to 80% and take them if it means we can be 100% for Bayern. So it's gamification. That's how I see the next 6 weeks.
Yeah, I think that's well said. And ultimately, Mikel got to do something in this game you almost never get to do in a Premier League game. He changed a lot of players in one game. I think the way rotation will work the rest of the season is one in, one out, right? So if he wants to rest Martin, which I don't know if he'll be able to do at any point, Rice and Jorginho still start, and that one Vieira comes in, but it's Rice and Jorginho and Saka and Martinelli and Kai and the regular back four. If he wants to try to rest Gabriel, God forbid, it's Tomiyasu, but it's Saliba, it's Kivior, it's White, right? Like one in, one out, that's it. If a guy needs rest, you try to keep the rest of the 10 other players as consistent as possible. And you see how it goes, Clive.
Yeah, I just wanted to. You mentioned Gabriel and Saliba. I'm not just. I know they're the flavour of the month at the moment, but geez, mate, they are so good. The feeling they're giving off in the crowd is just ridiculous. Please,
the vibes are immaculate between them too.
we mustn't take them for granted. They're just unbelievable. They are taking the defensive side of the game to a level that I've not seen at Arsenal since Sol Campbell and Kolo Touré. Simple as that. That's the level that they're at, if not beyond it, because they're both better on the ball. Way better on the ball. The game has changed. They have far more touches in the modern game compared to the game in 2004. You know what I mean? So this is incredible what's happening. And, mate, I don't ever want to see them not playing. Because if they're playing,
no,
we have a chance. We have a real chance because we're developing an aura around the defensive side of the game that they are critical to, that's starting to seep into people's minds. That they just think back to the day, and I haven't read Tim's article, but I'm sure you might have a slant on this. There was a period in our history when we scored, mate, people stopped trying. Do you know what I mean? Because they weren't going to score.
Yeah.
You know, as simple as that. And we're getting to, we're not there yet because football's changed. But their aura, I just got to say something. It really shone last night in a game that was a steady game, an easy game for us, really. But I just couldn't take my eyes off them. They were brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, well said. I think we can leave it there. Look, we're going to do a power rankings tomorrow, so we'll get to get stuck into what will be a hilarious United-Chelsea game. We can talk about how Sheffield United pulled off the miracle against all odds. And then we can use that as a chance to update on any news because we'll have Mikel's presser by then. So come join us at Patreon. You're going to like it. You're going to get instant reactions every match. You're going to get rewatches. You're going to get scouting videos. You're going to get power rankings. You're going to get Schadenfreude pods. You're going to get three big questions. You're going to get all kinds of stuff. One club. Yeah, of course. One club pod. And you're just going to get to be in the Discord, which means everybody will yell at everybody all the time forever. So there's that. Give to the fundraiser if you can. If you can't, no big deal. If you can, would mean a lot. Remember, we're matching $150,000 worth of donations up to the first $150,000. So an incredible time to give. Everything you give is doubled. And you can win a VIP ticket to be at the Bournemouth game in a box, part of the breakdown, meet Clive and Tim. What could be better than that? Maybe something, but I can't think of anything. We'll leave it there. Tim's on Twitter, at Stominator. Thanks, Tim.
My pleasure as always.
Clive's on Twitter, Clive PFC. Thanks, Clive.
Thank you very much.
My name is indeed Elliot Smith, ever since the witness protection program changed it to that. You can block me on Twitter, Yankee Gunner. We love you, and we'll talk to you after Arsenal 10 break. No.